Welcome to the podcast To Be Named Later, where we explore the world a conversation at a time. Sit back and enjoy. Here are your hosts, Chris and Kelly.
Hey, everyone. Welcome to another episode of the podcast To Be Named Later. We took a little bit of a bye week last week, and I guess we can do that a few more times because we make our own schedule, but we're back in studio. I'm in chilly, snowy, likely soon to be blizzardy Wisconsin. Chris is here with me off in sunny Southern California. Hey, Chris.
Hey, Kelly.
So how's that warm weather out there?
It's Southern California, baby. 71 degrees and sunny.
Distant memory for me now that I was out there a little bit ago, but we'll be packing up the house and heading off to our summer in winter kind of deal where we head out to Florida for about a month. So coming up in about 10 days, looking forward to that. Got a lot going on in the world of sports until we get there, but I want to start off with both a bit of a happy memory and a somber note. You know, as you get older, Chris, some of your childhood athletes start to pass away, and rest in peace and condolences to Franco Harris' family. He was a mainstay of sports in the 70s with that impressive Pittsburgh Steelers team.
Yeah, they own the 70s, man. I mean, that team is, I mean, obviously it evolves, but see, back then, you know, you got a team together like that, and that team stayed together, you know, and the guys you had on your roster, that was your roster. It might last you, you know, 6-7 years. And so you were able to have some of these just, you know, I mean, there's you can go through each decade and pull out a team, maybe two, that were truly dominant. And it's a little harder nowadays. I mean, I like it the way it's set up now for the parity. I like the fact that going into every season, you know, each fan base, you know, has some hope. I mean, some more than others, obviously, but you have some hope. You don't know. And I like the way it is now, but yeah, that 70s Steelers team. Now I was born in the 70s, so I can't speak to firsthand knowledge from watching them with my own eyes and following them. You know, I know enough of NFL history to know that that was their decade.
I mean, I was born in the late 60s, and really, as we know, the Packers weren't much in the 70s. It was pretty slim pickings. And actually, one guy who never really did much for the Packers but was really a great guy by all accounts passed away not too long ago. It's really honestly one of my first football memories. The Packers had made a trade for a quarterback named John Hadle. And I remember there was a billboard or a headline or something. This one, Coach Dan Devine made a trade for him. And it's one of the first football memories I have is this headline saying, "Has Devine found a Hadle in a haystack?" A little play on that old cliche. But it didn't really work out for him and the Packers, but he just passed away. I saw in the news a little while ago. But I wanted to ask you, Chris, and you grew up in the 70s. You know, what were some of your first teams that you remember? Kind of that, you know, young boy, young teenager where you, if you're into sports at all, you know, those guys are, I don't know if you want to call them heroes or whatever, but where you really get into it. What were some of yours? And I'll talk a little bit more about mine.
I'd say really I more grew up in the 80s, so I was born in 75, and you know, I football was a part of the household, but you know, at 5 years old, 6 years old, it's pretty hard to even understand the rules or what you're watching and stuff. I just, you know, I know my father's into it, but you know, and then around late 80s, you know, as you approach your teenage years, you have a better handle on things, and you know, those were my early days of following sports, and I was into sports, you know, right from go for the most part, you know. And you know, the one team that I first started following, you know, you know, we talk about all the time how you and I are Packer fans, and you know, my status or whatever you want to call it as being a Packer fan was an evolution of sorts, you know. My father and the whole family, for the most part, are Packer fans, and it's kind of bred into you. You know, you get Packer jammies and Packer toothbrush and things like that. But you know, when I was like entering junior high school, you know, I got the freedom to pick the team that I want, you know, and I'm kind of my own man now and I get to make my own choices. And the team that I was really fond of, you know, right then the 49ers were in their heyday, the Sam Weish 49ers, Joe Montana, just dominant teams, you know, and, you know, I didn't want to necessarily be a front runner. Most of my friends were 49ers fan because that was who was good. And the team I followed was the Bengals, and I wanted to, you know, pull for the dark horse. And I liked that Sam Weish led, you know, Boomer Esiason, Nicky Woods, James Brooks. I liked that Bengals team. They were, you know, a group of guys who kind of did it a little bit differently, kind of bucked the system a little bit, you know. You know, I liked them, man, and they were good, and they were a good competitive team, you know, that was winning and stuff, and that was my first, like, choice for myself as far as, you know, sports franchise to follow, and that I decided on my own. Who did you like when you were young, man?
So, you know, when I was young, and without getting into too many details, but you may or may not know because, you know, we didn't see each other that much when you were growing up. But I was a young kid up until I was 18. I could actually see a tiny bit. And so logos and colors of things were always, because sports logos are pretty dynamic and vibrant. And I remember a couple things that I was into because I would always go collect those little football helmets. You could put a quarter in the little machine. And, you know, I remember my younger brother, your Uncle Joel, you know, that was a big thing on a Friday. We'd get a quarter. We'd go walk down to the store and see what helmets we get. But I was really into the – and this one made me also think about Franco Harris today when I heard the news. I was really into the Houston Oilers, and Joel was into the Pittsburgh Steelers back then. And so, you know, back in the backyard, we had played epic Houston versus Pittsburgh games, you know, one-on-one. I really liked the, Houston, Earl Campbell, that song they had back then where the Houston Oilers, number one, where the offense, where the defense, can't remember more of it. But that was one of my teams growing up, you know, in addition to the Packers. But the Packers just weren't very good in the 70s, you know. The other team that I really liked, and maybe it was a combination of just that California dreaming, kind of exotic, warm weather, you know, back again here in the chilly Wisconsin, was San Diego Chargers with Don Coryell and just that excitement, Eric Coryell and the Dan Fouts and the passing offense. Those were kind of my two teams, I'd say, outside of the pack.
Yeah, and I don't think, you know, some of the old school guys, you know, could kind of take offense. Like you know, you root for your team, and that's your team, and you know, you ride and die with your team and stuff. And it's like, well, yeah, that's great. Well, if my team's not good, are you telling me I have to stop following football, like, when the playoffs start? Like, that kind of sucks. Like, I still like, you know, I need to have a backup, man, because my team's terrible. And so, you know, I will root for them, absolutely, all season. And then, you know, come the three-quarter mark and we're already mathematically eliminated, well, shit, I should have a secondary team that I can pull for, because this team's going to go further, and I want to continue to pull for somebody. And that's kind of how fortunately for the last, you know, 25 years, the Packers have been a competitive team. You know, back-to-back Hall of Fame quarterbacks will help you with that. And we, you know, have been in contention year in and year out, and so you're able to continue to root for your squad, you know, well into the playoffs and generally, you know, into championship games. And, so I've kind of floated around a little bit with some secondary teams, you know, on who I like. You know, I've actually been a Chiefs fan, you know, or pull for the Chiefs, you know, in the last few years. But now it's funny, man. They've gotten so good and so dominant. Like, if you win too much, I kind of get sick of you, man. And I was never a Patriots fan, and that when they were winning all the time, it was just easy to hate them. You know, I want someone new. So I'm always trying to find the up and coming, you know, the Browns or the Bills. And the Bills are now the established, and we'll see, you know, if they ramble off two or three Super Bowls, I may get sick of them too and start pulling for the next, you know, up and coming guy. But obviously, I pull for the Packers first. I'd love if they win the Super Bowl every year, and if they don't, then I generally pivot to somebody else that I'm kind of going to follow through the playoffs.
So you were a West Coast guy, and your family also was a little bit up and down the West Coast at different times. And you had teams like Seattle come into the league back then. Any fandom of those teams?
Yeah, well, I lived in Washington for a good chunk of my life, man. And that's funny that you bring them up because that was when so I was living in Seattle. And when Matt Hasselbeck was there, and they had a very good team, had a, I mean, one of the more classic playoff games in my memory was the we want the ball, we're going to score game.
Oh, I remember that one well.
We went to Jeff and Mary Ellen's that day to watch the game, and I was really torn. I mean, because I lived in the Seattle area at that time, and all my friends were Seahawks. You know, the Seahawks fans are very passionate, very knowledgeable, and you know, it's just easy to you know, root for them, right? And so you lived up there too. I mean, I know you got a soft spot for them as well. And so we're going to Jeff and Mary Ellen's to watch a Super Bowl one year, and we're going there to watch the playoff game, that game. As you come in, you know, TV, you know, set up for Super Bowl, there's a couple different TVs and the food's all inside on tables and countertops and whatnot. And then there was a sign that said, Seahawks fans seating this way. And it was a couple of folding chairs outside. You were allowed to look through the window. So you had to sit in the, on the side of the house and look through the window to watch the game. All the Packers fans got to sit inside on couches and recliners and next to the food and stuff. It was pretty funny. Well, as I'm coming to that game, I really kind of liked both those teams pretty equally, man. Like the Packers and the Seahawks, I liked them both. And I was like, man, really, really torn. I didn't know that this was going to happen. You know, I'm going to have to choose today. And as I pulled up and parked the car and went walking up and everything, I was legitimately on the fence. And then just at kickoff, the emotion from the rest of the family, from you know, just the flow of the game and everything, I just found like where my heart truly lied, and I just really wanted the Packers to win that game. And I from that moment on, I knew, okay, I had two loves, and I was forced to choose, and the Packers was clearly the team that I wanted to win in my heart. You know, as I'm watching that game, that's who I was pulling for. And I don't know if it was just because they came with better seating and access to the food, but on that day is when I knew for sure that you know, my heart was with the Packers in the end.
You know, you talk about kind of playoff or Super Bowl memories. I got a few, but it's always interesting when you don't really have a rooting interest in either side. I remember I was in college when the 49ers played the Broncos in a Super Bowl, and I was at a party and buddy's house, and the party I went to, they were all 49ers fans, but the people that lived below them in the apartment below were Broncos fans. And I just remember the people getting, you know, some of them had a little more partying than others. And this was, I forget the final score in that game, something like 55-10 or something. You remember that Super Bowl?
Yeah.
I mean, they were just getting silly and like jumping up and down on the floor, you know, yelling Denver sucks and just really getting out of, you know, just having a good time and everybody. But that memory of just that raw emotion and fun in a Super Bowl party kind of atmosphere sticks with me.
Yeah, and it's great, man. I mean, you ride with that team all year, and then, you know, you get to the playoffs, and all the teams in the playoffs, I mean, there's various degrees of good, but, I mean, these are all playoff teams. The competition is stiff, and if you win this one, you're going to have to play somebody else who's even tougher next week. And if you win that one, you got to play someone even tougher the week after that, and on, and it just kind of builds. And, yeah, it's exciting, man, and it's cool for those fan bases, you know, that do advance. And, yeah, you get the juices flowing a little bit, right, and tap the keg or whatever you're into, and by the time the game's winding down, you're probably a little loose on the inside.
You know, speaking of tapping the keg or that emotion or what, I guess, more than a little bit of celebrating going down on down in Argentina. World Cup finished up, and Argentina call it a victory.
Yeah, and good for Messi, and I followed, you know, the World Cup. You know, we've talked about this on the podcast a little bit, and, you know, I dive into those types of, you know, global competitions, and I even did a draft with three buddies, you know, when they got to the knockout stage, you know, four of us all threw a little cash in a pot, and we drafted four teams each, and I actually had France was my first round pick. So, you know, from a financial standpoint, I was pulling for France. But, you know, I'm watching that game, man, and first off, how cool, dude, I love it when there's, you know, you wake up in the morning and there's sports already on. You know, those early, like the group stage matches, and even actually in the knockout rounds, the games were scheduled at 7 a.m. my time. And, you know, I usually wake up somewhere in that range, you know, somewhere between like, you know, 5:45 and 7:30, you know, depending on what I got going on that day. And, you know, the days where I didn't have to be anywhere first thing in the morning. Pretty cool, man, to wake up and turn on the TV and, you know, there's a world-class, you know, sporting event taking place. Yeah, that final match, man, you know, Argentina in soccer, man, you go up 2-0, and that's pretty well a death sentence at that point, man. Very, very rare that a team's going to come back, especially with the class of defense that these, you know, teams have at this level. And it's just hard to score a goal in soccer, man. That's all there is to it. And so, but for France to fight back and tie it, and it was just a really, really you know, you hear the phrase instant classic, you know, it's thrown out all the time, instant classic. And this one truly was, though, man. I mean, this really was you know, for all the marbles, you know, two teams evenly matched, and that, you know, they went the full distance through all the extra time, went to penalty kicks, and Messi got that, you know, last piece to the puzzle that he needed. You know, in what I'm sure is his final match, you know, for the Argentinians.
I think the World Cup is one of those things that so I find it fascinating to see how much it gets a country behind a team. I don't think, again, I don't live in the other countries, but from what I read and observe, you know, yeah, we get a touch of that when the U.S. does anything a little bit good in something like the World Cup. But, I mean, some of the other countries, they live and breathe this stuff.
Oh, dude, they cut to scenes, Kelly, of like town squares or you know, downtown. There's thousands of people. I mean, thousands, tens of thousands, man. They cut to, you know, these various locations in Argentina where, I mean, there's, you know, just hundreds of people watching, like, one TV. And, you know, they show you the reaction. You know, everyone's just glued. You know, I mean, as far as the eye can see, there's just human beings, right? And they're all gathered together. You know, when a goal scored, man, I mean, just the elation and the just – you can just feel it. I mean, just right now as I'm saying it, I can like feel it on my skin. Like, oh man, yeah, that feeling chills. You get in that moment, and everyone around you is feeling the exact same thing that you are, you know. And you know, and then when France scores, and they cut to the same scene but in France, you know, and they're, you know, their feeling of like, oh, we got a chance, you know, or when the tying goal happened. And just, you know, you can just feel that as a sports fan who's been on both sides, you know, the winning end, the losing end, and that feeling you get, you know, when you know, your hope is brought back to life and all of that. It's just it's cool, man. It's really cool to see. And like you said, I mean, you know, especially Argentina, you know, it's their life, man. That for that 2 hours. There's nobody doing anything but watching that game.
I think, you know, we don't get too much into politics on this podcast, but I guess, you know, I'm a couple things about me. I I root for underdogs, I guess, and ultimately I still root for the world, you know, to get along and all that. And I'm not saying sports is perfect, but I think one of the things I do like about sports, and it's, like I said, it's got flaws, but is that it brings people together in ways that a lot of things don't, and just people from a wide range of circumstances get behind rooting for something. So, and it can be taken too far, and I get all that, but I think that feeling of goodness and just, I don't know, when you're having that story, that feeling, it is one of those things that, for me, it really does kind of touch you at a core and emotional of, you know, if we can just figure this all out and get along, the world is a pretty cool place.
Yeah, and it's too bad, man, because I think you hit it right on the head, Kelly, that the sports shows you that, hey, man, we could be pulling in different directions and in a sporting event between, you know, two teams or two individuals or whatever. We could not be further from each other in what we want the outcome to be here. I want you to lose and you want to win. We are clearly on opposing sides. There's no overlap here. You know what I mean? Like, we don't have some things we agree upon, you know, as far, like, you know, this is a clear black and white scenario where one of us is going to lose and one of us is going to win. And in politics, you know, it's just ugly, man. Whoever wins, you still end up feeling icky, and it was gross how you got there. And by all accounts, I mean, for the most part, the World Cup as a whole, excellent sportsmanship. Obviously, France wants to win. Obviously, Argentina wants to win. Well, I can't win if you do. So I need you to lose in order for me to achieve what I want. But we can still behave respectfully towards each other. You know, we can fight tooth and nail to try and accomplish our goal. But when it's over, we can respect each other. You know, we can shake hands and tip our caps and say, wow, man, that was good for you, man. I gave it all I had. And you know, you came out the better man or the better team. And everyone leaves it feeling good. Obviously, you know, France is disappointed and the French fans are disappointed and stuff, but you can still leave feeling like, man, we did the best we could. And I wish there was more of that in life.
Yeah, I think that, you know, when that in sports and maybe art or good music, I think about that same feeling. I've been to a lot of concerts. When you have that kind of shared experience, it's just magical. I still remember going to a Tom Petty concert when I lived in Washington, out at a place they call the Gorge Amphitheater, and, you know, whatever it was, I don't know, if I says, I don't know, 10,000, 15,000, 20,000 people, whatever the venue holds, just all kind of sitting back and singing, Learning to Fly. It's just one of those things that makes an electric feeling. Had that same thing with an Eagles show or a Crosby, Stills, and Nash & Young show or a Bruce Springsteen show. I love that feeling. I really get that feeling at live music when it's good, of just that connectedness and that just kind of reaching into your soul, if you will, and pulling the best part out of you.
Yeah, and as humans, man, we need that connection. You know, you need it. You know, in the immediate, with your spouse or your children or your family or friends or whatever your circle, you know, holds, but we need it, you know, beyond that as well, man. I mean, you know, sometimes I think we forget, like, hey, man, we're all in this together. You know, this is one planet, we got to share it, or you know, this is one country, or you know. We got to share it, man, and we're in this together. We should be, you know, for the most part, pulling in the same direction and pulling for each other.
Yeah, I mean, and I guess, you know, hey, we can have disagreements about how we should get to where we want to be. We can do all that. But again, there's exceptions to the rule, but by and large, you know, one of the best feelings, even if your team loses, like if you're at a place watching a game with a really good crowd, and your team loses or wins, just when you've really had that good experience and, you know, the crowd after the game goes up to each other and, you know, shake a hand or a high five or whatever, and you just all recognize, you know, as fans, you just were part of something exciting and magical, whichever the outcome was, and you can all appreciate it. I just think that is a feeling of just kind of that you want to look for. I know we're weaving a bit away from sports, but I at one point, I remember taking this class for work, actually. It was kind of a... And this was a great learning experience for me. It was a class, I don't remember the name of it, but what they actually did, for one part of the class, you went rock climbing, wall rock climbing, you know, an indoor thing. And so the whole point of it was to get you to recognize that feeling of confidence and trust that you had both in yourself, like climbing up this wall. And this might sound a little bit woo-woo, but it actually worked. I enjoyed it. Getting and that trust in the other people, you know, people that do the belaying on the rock climbing ropes and stuff, and then saying, "Hey, remember that feeling of confidence that you had, and just kind of whatever when you were on that wall. If you're in a stressful situation at work, think about physically how you felt when you were in that confidence zone, and try and put those feelings in your body or in your thoughts while you're going through this stressful thing, and you know, that will, your body will start to calm down and react." It was a really an interesting learning experience, and I use that model for a good sports experience. I mean, as well, like, just, yeah, it's a bummer when your team loses, but think about the experience and enjoy it and those feelings. It is. And I guess, I get that out of music, and I myself also really enjoy live theater. That's all of those things. Anything that can kind of just pull you into that greater sense of humanity and recognition that, you know, we all are on one planet, and it's spinning around, and this is all we got, man. So let's just treat each other and the world with decency.
Agreed wholeheartedly, man. And like I said, I think you can learn a lot from sports in that, you know, guaranteed on any team sport. Not everyone agrees on what play should be called or who should shoot the last shot or, you know, what pitcher should start today or whatever you want, whatever sport you want to use. But, you know, once the decision's made, we're all pulling in the same direction. And life's like that too, man. I mean, you just, you know, we might not agree you know, where we all want to go eat tonight, but once it's decided, then, you know, everyone's on board, man. Let's all pull in the same direction. And I think that can be spread out on larger scale, you know. 10,000 people, yeah, we all have different opinions and stuff, but, you know, this is what's been decided, and so now let's all pull in the same direction from here.
Yeah, and I guess I would close it up, this part of our thing, by saying, you know, the thing that's interesting is, and you see this with athletes a lot, and again, I have a lot of respect for them. They can go really have one of the, you know, the hard-fought competition, and sometimes, you know, then whether it's hockey in the handshake line or whatever other sports are doing, where you can tell sometimes just from what you hear and probably see, like, there's a genuine respect still for the competition that you each put each other through.
Oh, I mean, you see it all the time in personal, like MMA. Two dudes that are literally trying to destroy the other person physically for, you know, a period of time, however long, you know, the 15, 20 minutes that the fight lasts or whatever, right? And they could not have worse intentions towards the other person while they're in the competition. And then, you know, when it's done and one guy's won and the other guy's lost, the respect that's there between them. And, you know, like I said, when you're thinking MMA or boxing or wrestling or whatever, you know, within the confines of the sport itself, like I said, they could not be further apart, right? And, you know, what they're doing to that other individual is, you know, about as rough as it gets, right? And then, but yeah, when it's done, okay, we're done now. And it's time for us to have a mutual respect, man. Boy, you were tough. And I applaud the effort that you put in, you know, tonight. And happy I won, but got a lot of respect for you. You know, don't know if I'd want to do this again, to be honest with you, man. Even though I won, I'm not sure that I feel that way.
Yeah, so definitely lighten it up a little and not to make trivialize anything that we just said. You know, I guess I hope that you're going to still have mutual respect for me. We talked a little bit off air. Why don't you fill the listeners in? How's our competition and what's happening for that dinner?
Well, yeah, I mean, I still respect you, Kelly.
Just remember, I'm your uncle.
Yep, I respect my elders, yeah, it's not much. Hope is fading fast, buddy. You're down 12. You're down 12 games with 3 weeks to go, my friend. So, boy, you're really gonna have to shine to overcome that kind of deficit. So, we're sitting 140 to 128 with 3 weeks left in the season. So, good luck.
Gee, thanks, Chris.
Yeah, speaking of 3 weeks left in the season and you know, not a lot of time left, the NFL is coming together, man. We got
We got six of the positions locked in for
yeah,
the playoffs?
Yeah, six playoff teams are locked. I think it's four division winners are locked. Let's see, the AFC West is locked. The NFC North, West are both locked. So I guess three divisions are locked. And then you got the Bills who are going to be in the playoffs in some capacity. And then the Eagles and Cowboys are both going to be in the playoffs. And then
the Eagles have won that division, haven't they? I believe.
No, they play the Cowboys this week. Actually, sounds like Hurts isn't going to play, man. I mean, all accounts, which is brutal. We actually have a smaller league, and so we played through week 15 in our play. We don't have that quarterfinal matchup like a lot of leagues do. So our playoffs start this week, and it's looking real heavy. Like I'm not going to have Hurts, who's been carrying my team all season. You know, as my quarterback, and now I don't have him, it looks like, which is unfortunate. So, and unfortunate for the Eagles, who are trying to, you know, not as important as my fantasy playoffs, but to them it's important. They're trying to clinch that home field and the number one seed in the NFC, and I think that they may be without Jalen Hurts for this Cowboys game, and going to be starting with Gardner Minshew. Right now, as it sits, the entire NFC East is in the playoffs. Now they'll be playing each other, and there's some teams. I'll tell you what, man, the Lions. I don't know, man. They don't seem to be slowing down at all.
And I've been on the Lions all year.
Well, you're right. They're coming, and the Giants are. So the Buccaneers have the benefit of the division that they play in. Someone's going to win that division. They'll be a terrible football team, whoever it is. Right now, it's up for grabs. So
that division, the NFC South, is really the best of the best of the worst. I mean, any team that could have done anything reasonable, you know, they could have a 3 or 4 game lead, and it's. You're very likely going to end up with a under 500 team.
Yeah, I mean, someone's going to have to win out. Well, and only the Bucks are the only team who has a chance to finish above 500. The Panthers, Saints, and Falcons already have 9 losses. Now, they're all tied. So Carolina, New Orleans, and Atlanta are all sitting at 5-9, and the Bucs are sitting at 6-8. So if the Bucs can win out, in fact, let me see what their schedule is. They play... where's your schedule at, Bucks? At the Cardinals. Hold on, stand by.
While you're looking that up, maybe it's time for the NFL to consider a small change to playoff rules and adopt a little bit of the college football bowl concept that at minimum you got to have a 500 record to get in. And if you don't, well, we'll go figure some way to get another team.
Yeah, I mean, I don't mind that. I like the so they're at the Cardinals. So I'll jump back real quick. I pulled it up. At the Cardinals, home for the Panthers, and at the Falcons. So, you know, all three of those are winnable, and all three of them are losable based on what I've seen to this point. I'm not opposed to that, Kelly. Yeah, I like that, actually, to
I mean, I said it partly tongue-in-cheek, but
– no, I mean, you know what, dude? If you can't finish above 500 – you know, there's an exemption. I like the division winners. I like that the division winners get a home game. I'm okay with that. You know, that a really, really, really good second place team has to go on the road. It adds a cool dynamic to, like, hey man, you know, I know the Cowboys, you know, finished second in the NFC, and I know they're a wild card, which means they have to go on the road. You don't want to play the Cowboys, you know, and. You know, and that can be the case sometimes where you have a stronger, you know, individual division, and that second place team could be the second place team in all of football, you know, potentially. And hey, you know what? I like that dynamic. I like that. Hey, you know, this team's got to go on the road. It gives value to the regular season. In all seriousness, like I said, I
kind of made it a slightly tongue in cheek, but not entirely, because. I get it. You know, you are your division, you know, because you play, you know, a big chunk of your games within that division. But at some level, I mean, I would say just for competitive interest, if nobody in this, I'd have to go back and do the calculations. I probably won't. But if no team in a division can rise above, you know, the 500 level, maybe for this thing that we call the playoffs, we should not punish another team that could have a significantly better record that's going to lose out only in those circumstances.
I just think it would add excitement, buddy. You know what I mean? I just think that...
I think it would.
So right now, like, the Seahawks and the Lions and even the Packers still mathematically are chasing for that, you know, those last couple spots, right? Now, if they have another backdoor in where, hey, you know, right now there's two, you know, playoff spots available, or three wild cards available, right? Well, if the Bucks don't finish 500, man, there's four wild card spots available. One of us can get in if the Bucks don't beat Atlanta in that final game of the season or whatever, right? And I think it could add a new wrinkle to the final, to the end of the season. Like, hey, you know, the Seahawks are still alive. If the Bucks can lose to Atlanta, then the NFC is going to have four wild cards and only three division winners.
It would make you know, that week 17 games sometimes are more interesting, and it'd probably be the closest that we could have to, you know, what some soccer leagues have, where they have relegation, you know, and promotion.
Yeah. So the Houston Texans are going to have to go play in the SEC next year.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know.
The NFL's minor league division?
Training division. Something would be interesting. But so, yeah, I mean, going to be interesting to see.
George is going to find themselves in the AFC South next year.
You know, there's that old saying about, you know, people always say, you know, could a college team beat an NFL team? And everyone says, well, no way.
I don't know about that, man.
I don't know, man. I could.
The NFL team would be the favorite, but I don't know about that.
I would say that there are a few cases where I've seen some really weak teams that I think some of these college teams today can at least give them a run for their money.
I agree 100%. I mean, I definitely can envision a scenario where a dominant college team, when in a specific calendar year, may match up against what the worst the NFL has to offer, and they can beat them. So it's a team, dude. It's a team sport. And now I get that the essentially the NFL team would be made up of all-star college players, you know, the best the college has to offer. And, you know, a lot of times they have an extra 2, 3, 4, 5 years of growth and age and strength and conditioning and experience and all of that. But if a cohesive unit could show up and play against a team that's disjointed, and even if the, you know, on an individual basis they maybe have more talent, I could see a college team beating an NFL team. That's my opinion. So again, the NFL team would be favored. You know, it wouldn't happen every year, but it's not impossible.
Speaking of college teams, we're in this awkward thing, and it is what it is. But I guess my call it my complaint session or whatever is, as we've said, get off my lawn. I find it kind of unique, interesting, or whatever that, again, you know, the drama of the college season, season ended a couple weeks ago for right now. We've had massive news with the transfer portal. Today is National College High School Signing Day, so a lot of colleges are touting who's coming. Coaches are bouncing around, you know, all lining up for next year. And then we're going to turn back on the machine of, let's get excited about the bowls. I find it interesting, you know, I don't know how many there's been of the 41 or 42 games, whatever it was already, but I know there's been a bunch. I myself, so far, I have not watched a single college bowl game, and that didn't used to be the case.
Well, you and I talked off air, Ben, and I said the same thing. I also have not watched an entire college bowl game. And, you know, when we were doing the podcast a couple weeks ago and talking, I just made the assumption that I would, you know, I'd be watching these, man. I love football. I watch high school football. I watch Pop Warner football. Certainly college. I watch the FCS and follow that. And I like sports, man, and football's my favorite. So, of course, I'm going to watch. And as, you know, games have been happening, I find myself just not even interested in following it. And I would have never thought that to be the case. But that's how it's played out, man. And that says a lot about the state of college football, the fact that I am your market, man. I am your core. And I'm not alone. I mean, there's, you know, thousands of people just like me, but I'm a huge sports fan. Football is my favorite of the sports. And so almost any product you give me, I'll take it and consume it. And the fact that I'm choosing not to, that says you guys are in some trouble with these bowl games, man, because if you're losing guys like me, if you're losing my interest, there's a lot of people behind me who have even less interest than I do.
You know, and I'm not I'm all for the changes, a lot of them, like the transfer portal and things like that. I think it's look, the fact is that for a player to get to the next level, or whether you're going to go pro or, you know, college is where your career ends, if you're stacked four deep, you know, at QB in, say, Alabama, well, why not? Why not go to another place if you got a shot to get on the field and showcase your talents? I mean, you just never know who's going to come out of where. I mean, we can go back to the pros and look at, you know, everyone made a joke, Mr. Irrelevant, well, he's looking okay right now for the 49ers. So imagine if that was college. You know, wouldn't he want to get into a portal if he was third on the depth chart?
Yeah, and the product on the field this year throughout the regular season was one of the best that I'd seen. And it was a riveting college football regular season all the way through the conference championships. And now we get to this place. I mean, it's real simple in my mind, man. There's just too many bowls. It's too watered down. You know, if you're putting a teaspoon of sugar inside your 8-ounce cup of tea, it goes a long ways. You put that same teaspoon of sugar into a gallon, and it's a band. You can't really feel the effect anymore. And I think that's where we're at. There's just simply too many. And, you know, there's some good ones that, you know, once we start getting into New Year's Day and closer to New Year's Day and you know, even in the days leading up, there's a couple of, like, decent ones. You know, let's condense it, man. And if what you have to do to incentivize – I mean, there's a lot of money. Or at least there used to be a lot of money, and there can be again. And if what we need to do is incentivize some of these people to, you know, play this game monetarily, then so be it. You know, yeah, give them a $50,000 bonus for winning the game, you know. Whatever you got to do, you know, get these kids to play. I don't fault them individually, and I understand that, you know, they're moving on in their lives, and they're doing what's best for them and their family, and I'll never fault anybody for that. You know, if you're making choices, as long as you're not negatively affecting somebody else, directly, then I'm, you know, you not playing is negatively affecting me watching you on my TV, watching your team on my TV, but that doesn't count.
You know, Chris, I agree. I got no problem with players trying to better themselves. Like I said, if you're buried on a depth chart or it's just not working, or your team, you know, has had a coaching change, as we've already seen, you know, in several cases, I think the sport's still evolving. The 12-team playoff will do some of this, and maybe we will see elimination of some of the bowl games, or we'll figure out what happens. I think the sport has to continue to evolve and find a way to do some pieces of it more rapidly. As it does, college football, that is, kind of, you know, pick back up a little bit. Once we get through these early bowl games, what are some of the games you're looking forward to in the next week, Chris?
Well, I mean, there's some pretty interesting matchups that are more the classic, like, hey, you know, this conference against that conference, and you might not be the best team in your particular conference, but you're pretty good. You were fighting for a spot. You know, you might have been number two or three. You know, you lost a championship game, and we'll start seeing some of these guys matched up with each other. Next Wednesday, Oregon and North Carolina, I think, are two, you know, both really good teams. I'm interested in that game. You know, same day, even Kansas and Arkansas, you know, a little bit lesser teams in their conferences, but, you know, I'm interested to see, you know, how those two teams match up to each other. And then, as you continue to progress, you know, Texas and Washington looks interesting. The 30th has Clemson and Tennessee. All of those are games that I'm interested in, man. These are good teams, you know, not playoff teams and you know, not, necessarily the best that their conference had to offer, but, you know, pretty good. And, you know, we'll just see. You know, it's so tough, man. I mean, I used to, you know, I used to put a bunch of parlay tickets together and, you know, me and my Uncle Tim, we'd chat before the bowl started. And, you know, I understand there's a break. Okay. So they're going to get anywhere from 2 to 4 weeks off in between games, you know, depending on which game you're playing in and when it's scheduled and all that. But you generally had a sense of, you know, what the team was, what they were about, who they were, the capabilities of that team. And now with this new, you know, age of the bowls and the timing of them relative to, you know, the stars, you know, NFL future and the coaching changes and all the stuff that's taking place. I just don't know I don't know a lot about this team anymore. You know, the coach isn't there. The middle linebacker's not playing. Their all world left tackle's not playing. The starting quarterback's not playing. The tailback's not playing. And it's like, well, man, I don't know enough about college football to tell you how good the backup left tackle is on teams. You know what I mean? And so, we'll see what they have to offer. But, yeah, my interest level, I haven't made a single wager on a college football game. I haven't put any parlay tickets together because I'm going to have to wait till, like, day of in a lot of cases, or I need a full research assistant to let me know who's all playing and what the, you know, how good the backups are, for me to make an educated choice. So it's a little different, man. I mean, you know, once we get to the New Year's Eve games, the semifinals, the two games, at that point, I think we're pretty full steam ahead, you know, and we're going to have a really nice slate of games, both on that day and then the couple days to follow.
You know, you just mentioned a bunch of different positions, and one of them that you talked about was tailback. It made me think, jumping back to the NFL, kind of one of my guys, again, that I've been a fan of, just went on IR in the NFL, and made me think, you know, Jonathan Taylor, former Badger Colts running back. We've talked about this a few times, but it really, I wonder what is, you know, I know it's just his ankle, but, you know, just interesting to see how fleeting the NFL career is. You know, he had a, I'm not saying his career is over by any stretch, but you just wonder with a guy like that, you know, where will he be?
I think Jonathan Taylor is going to be just fine. I mean, it's just the timing of it. You know, if they were in the playoff hunt, and this was, you know, week 11, and, you know, they'd fight to get him back. I think this is a situation, there's 3 weeks left. Generally, this is a 2 to 4 week injury, high ankle sprains, you know, and they kind of linger. Jonathan Taylor is going to be fine. But you're right, the NFL career is fleeting. And I mean, look at a guy like Odell Beckham. You know, he don't have a home. And, you know, by all counts, man, pretty talented dude when he's right. Had a ACL, got a fix, came back, looked really good with the Rams, got another ACL, you know, and may or may not have it fixed. But, you know, he went from being one of the best receivers in football to, now, mind you, these are two pretty significant injuries, but you know what I mean? A couple injuries away from out of the league. And, yeah, man, it's not for long, you know.
Well, and I think about this, and we never hear about this really that much, right? So the NFL, 3 weeks left to go in the regular seasons and then playoffs. But, you know, I don't know what the number is. If I had to guess, I'd say at least 15% of the league will be playing their last game in their NFL career in 3 weeks.
Yeah, you think it's that high? I don't know. I wonder what that number is as well. But you're right. I mean, there is a percentage. There's definitely a number of dudes that will either not have jobs or will retire or whatever the case may be. And, you know, and yeah.
So, maybe it's not that high, but it wouldn't surprise me if it was. Every year, just do the math, every year teams draft at least 7 new players, 7 rounds.
Well, not if you're the Rams.
Well, okay, but not saying they all make the league, you know.
Yeah, but no, you're right. I mean, 10% of a you know 50 man would be 5, right? So I think they dress 53. I forget the numbers.
It's 53 on a roster with a practice squad. You know, and I think that practice squad is actually pretty big now, bigger than it used to be, but. You know,
yeah, again, you're talking 10% would be 5 dudes, and you draft 7 every year.
You know, so, and then I just think about that. And most of those guys, you know, will, you know, they come and they go. It's just interesting how fleeting that career is and how few of the people we know about, you know, this just happens. And then, you know, just kind of circle back to where we started. There are, you know, those players that transcend, and that's why they call them Hall of Famers, I guess. You know, guys like Franco Harris or the other people. But just up and down a roster. And I wonder what that's like for somebody. I don't know. What, you know, go back to your own career, Chris. I mean, you must have known when you played your last high school game that it was your last competitive football game.
Yeah, I mean, I
what was that like?
Yes, it's sad. Well, and I lost it. So it was in my, you know, state playoffs, and But we lost our last game, and without, you know, without winning a title, and I had a really good team, man. We were a good team. You know, we were definitely we were the favorites to win, and we didn't. And yeah, it's devastating. It's heartbreaking, you know. And you know, for these guys who have you know, made a life of this, it is yeah. I'm dude, you see it all the time, man. Guys, well, they retire and unretire and come back, and you know, if you have the stature for that, if you're a Tom Brady or a Brett Favre, you know, you're gonna find a home, right? Someone's gonna give you a job, right? But a lot of these guys aren't those guys. And you know, some will get relegated, right? And maybe they were a starter last year, but you know, they still have a spot on the team, but they're no longer a starter anymore. You know, they'll be there in case of need. You know, if someone gets hurt or whatever. And some guys kind of slowly fade off; they don't just disappear overnight. But yeah, no, it's tough, man. I mean, these guys, you know, they're leaving something that has been their life. Many of them since they were probably 6 years old. Now they're, you know, 30, 31, 35, whatever. And you can't – everything you've learned to this point is – now you can go into broadcasting, right, or become an analyst, or, you know, you could be like Stink or Golic or something, right? There's lots of spots available, Tony Romo, you know what I mean? You could find a home where you still get to use some of your knowledge to some capacity. But the skill set that you've been making your living off of is useless at this point. Now the knowledge you have may not be, but the your ability to sack a quarterback does not matter at all anymore. You're never going to use that skill again, and you know, that's got to be tough, man. I mean, that's a forced life change. You know, you could transition. I don't know, you go sell insurance. You can open up a car dealership. I don't know. You know, find something to do with your time, dude. But you're not doing this.
So, as a running back, what was the longest running yardage you gained on a play?
Oh, man, that's a good question, Kelly. Actually, I don't know. I mean, I broke a couple off. So I played defensive back. I returned punts and kickoffs. And so, I mean, I've had to do a you know, an 85-yard sprint before in some capacity on a football field. You know, I picked a pass off, and you got to weave through traffic going the other way. And I've had to run a long distance, man, as far as like a called, you know, running play from the offensive end. Boy, you'd think I'd know this off the top of my head, but I don't, actually. I don't know what my longest play from scrimmage was. But I do know I picked off a ball as they were going in, you know, trying to go in to score, and I ran the distance the other way, holding their football and scoring a defensive touchdown before.
Does that feeling, that emotion, I mean, no, it's a long time, and I'm not – trying to be like the old Bruce Springsteen Glory Days tune, but do you remember that feeling? Do you miss it?
No, I wouldn't say I don't. I mean, I've just kind of accepted my – it was a long time ago, dude. So, you know, I mean, I can remember it. Yeah, I can remember facial expressions. I remember my Uncle Tim and my father sitting on the sideline of the Laguna Hills game where – you know, we just ran a basic sweep play, you know, just to the left side. And as I'm running down the sidelines with the ball, I'm making faces at them out of my helmet. And you know, they were right there. And you know, and I can remember that. You know, I remember Notaboom. You know, him and I were both tailbacks, but, you know, depending on the formation, we played a lot of two running back sets. I, you know, it was supposed to be a 34, and it ended up being a 24, right? And so the quarterback, you know, he turns and he pitches the ball. It was supposed to go to Scott. And the quarterback gave me the ball. And Scott's like, give me the ball. I was like, no, go block, bro. And we're having this conversation in the backfield as, you know, the place, you know, everyone else is out there blocking and running and the defensive guys are coming. And him and I are talking about who, you know, who gets to take the ball. And Scott went. And yeah, it was a pretty nice gain. I mean, we were running, you know, I mean, we were kind of making our way to, you know, towards the, where the ball was supposed to go. But yeah, it was like a sweet play. And you know, he was supposed to get the ball, and the quarterback tossed it to me instead. And he's like, give me the ball. I was like, nah, bro, go block. I got the ball. Yeah, we had that whole conversation in the backfield. Ended up being a pretty nice game, too, if I remember correct.
He was a great. Good blocker. I guess maybe you could read War and Peace as you're running down the field at some point.
Yeah. No, I do remember the times. I do remember the emotions. I remember the feelings of the losses. I remember the elation. I remember the bus rides home after victories, you know. Yeah, I remember it, man. But, you know, I wouldn't say at this point I miss it. You know what I mean? Like, I've accepted the fact that, you know, it was something in the past. I think in order to miss something, well, maybe not. Maybe that's not true, actually. I mean, you can miss people when they've passed and people from your life. But, you know, if you miss it more if there's a chance you can have it back, right? And so I would probably think about it more if I thought there – dude, I'm lucky if I can make it down a flight of stairs without hurting myself at this point in my life. So, you know, I don't have dreams or aspirations of making a run at it. You know, I still got my eligibility, man. I'm gonna go give it a run.
Over 50 football league.
I will say I did all the way up until probably close to 30 years old. I did have that on my mind as like, hey, man, you know, I was a pretty good high school football player, right? But you know, as things worked out, I just, you know, I didn't give it a run in college, and I was still pretty athletic, dude, all the way through my 20s, you know. And you know, in your mind, you always think like, hey, if I just hit the gym, if I just start training, if I just start, you know, going through some drills and kind of get some things back, I probably could still play. And then I don't remember when I finally gave that dream up, but you know, it would enter my head from time to time for several years after, like, hey, man, I'd be old, right? And, you know, I'm not going to the NFL or anything, but I bet I could still play football. And at some point, it's just like, okay, yeah, no, we ain't playing football no more.
we'll dig up the old electric football for you, Chris.
Yeah, what do they shake across the board?
Turn it on, get a little vibration going on, you know. Hey, man.
Yeah.
New thing. It's electric football and a body massager.
No, I find my competition on cornhole boards, dart boards, pool tables, you know, things that require a little less from me physically.
Well, Chris, as always, another entertaining week. And we'll see what shakes down between now and next week as far as football. Want to say a happy and merry Christmas to you and all the family out in California. Hope Santa's good to you. Gets you some NFL wins. Better bring me a bunch of them. Got to figure that out. I'm 12 behind. Otherwise, you're getting a dinner out of me.
Yeah, we should have some additional clarity. Hopefully, we'll get a chance to talk next week. You know, we should have some clarity, and then we should be right on the cusp of you know, meaningful college games that'll be coming and stuff. So I'm excited, man. We'll have the first round of our fantasy under our belt. We'll see where we stand. You know, we're both back to competing on that, and we should be able to have a really fun conversation next week, man. We'll have some intel.
All right. Thanks, everyone, for listening to this episode of the podcast to be named later.
Hey, thanks, Kelly.